I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to music featured in Reggie Wilson's Fist and Heel Performance Group. They're performing November 17th through the 19th at Whitebird Dance. We're going to talk with Walter Jaffe and Paul King this morning, the founders of Whitebird Dance, and we'll also hear from Reggie Wilson himself. So stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the KABU studio are Walter Jaffe. Hello.
Hey, Dee Mae. How are you?
Welcome back. You're a little bit too powerful today,
okay.
Walter.
Okay.
And Paul King, you can come closer to the mic. There you go.
Hi, Dee Mae. It's so good to see you again.
Well, it's good to have you guys both back on. It's been a while.
Thanks for having us.
At least a year and a half or so. So things are going great for you, too. You both have brought innovative dance to Portland from around the country and the world. And you have so many dance groups booked this season. Have you counted how many? I guess you have, Walter. How many dance groups are you?
Well, I think it's close in the nature of 225, 230 companies that we brought over. We're now going into our 19th year. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot, definitely. But do you know how many this season?
12. Each year it's 12.
Yeah, this year.
Each season we bring 12 companies.
12. So
yes.
That's been a standard,
yes.
Then. Okay,
yes.
All right. Well, you have both the dance series and then you have Whitebird Uncaged.
Yes.
I'm going to talk a little bit about Whitebird Uncaged more, but what's the differences between the two? Paul, you want to take that on?
Sure. Well, the Whitebird Dance Series is one that is was the first series that we established, and it was back at the beginning. It was in the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, 2,776 seats.
Wow.
Big place for dance, but a great place for dance. But eventually, the Newmark Theater became available because Portland Center Stage moved over to the Armory. And so then we had an 880-seat theater, which we could use for three nights. And so we were able to bring companies that didn't have to fill a 2,800-seat theater. And eventually we realized within 2 years that our audience was missing out on a lot of work that is really appropriate for Lincoln Hall. More emerging artists, smaller work.
And more local artists, too.
And certainly Portland-based artists, absolutely.
Well, let's talk about the Whitebird Uncaged because you're bringing Reggie Wilson. We're going to be talking to him soon. The term uncaged would indicate the series takes more risks, perhaps.
Yes, actually, the original name of the series was Whitebird PSU Dance Series. It was in tribute
to the
Portland
yeah.
State Contemporary Dance Season, which is a very well-established, respected dance season that unfortunately ended due to budget cuts before we arrived in Portland in 1996. So it was actually in 2002, 2001, we started the Whitebird PSU Dance Series. Then in 2008-09, we lost Lincoln Hall for 2 years because they were undergoing major renovation and seismic upgrade. So what do we do? Instead of halting that second series, which was very important, we decided to roam the city. And we changed the name to Whitebird Uncaged in tribute to Barney, the white bird, of course, who's now flapping his wings and happily aww. Going around the city. So for 2 years, each venue was in an alternative space. Many were warehouse spaces. Then 2 years later, Lincoln Hall was totally finished and we went back into the cage. But rather than changing the name, which people really liked, we decided it really referred also to the kind of work that we were doing, which is more forward-thinking, progressive, sometimes taking more risks, and so on.
Thus, Uncaged. In case you just joined us, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts talking with the co-founders of Whitebird Dance, Walter Jaffe and Paul King. And you can find out more about them at whitebird.org or stageandstudio.org or kabu.fm/stageandstudio as we continue our talk here. You have three upcoming shows, including Reggie Wilson, who will be here in Portland November 17th through the 19th. We'll talk more about the upcoming shows past Reggie, but first off, sure. I want to find out more about Reggie, his group Fist and Heel Performance Group. When did you first see them or become aware of them?
You know, Reggie has been around really a long time. you know, in New York, and we've been aware of Reggie and have talked with him and looked at his work and looked at various projects he was working on to see if they were appropriate. What's important to note, I think, for this season is that we have two themes, and one of them is exploring the power of gender, and the second one is embracing African-American culture. And we just had a few weeks ago, last month now, Camille Brown, who was in our Uncaged season 2 years ago and is now part of the White Bird Dance series. And she brought a piece called Black Girl Linguistic Play that was all women. So that her show fit under both themes. Now, Reggie, this work is called Moses's, and we actually brought Reggie to the Joyce Theater in New York as part of American Dance Platform. We were asked to curate the very first version of it, and he represented the New York region as part of that project.
I want to hear a clip from the show, and it's Moses with a parentheses S, so it's Moses's. Let's hear a clip from the show from Reggie Wilson's Moses's.
Moses, Moses, don't get along with my Red Sea.
So this is dance, but it was beautiful harmonies, beautiful percussion, and, you know, original music and from the gospel traditions. Does that make them stand out as a company, as a dance company?
This is what Reggie's interested in. He's interested in all aspects of performance, and he's really interested in telling a story. He harking back to the history of the diaspora, of the Africans moving outwards, especially to the U.S., so it really feels very all-embracing, the different forms of performance he uses in this piece. And that is really what makes it exciting. If you love music, if you love singing, and, of course, if you love movement, this is perfect work.
All in a 75-minute show.
Exactly.
Which is awesome. But, well, I'm going to find out more from Reggie Wilson himself and the Fist and Heel Performance Group. Joining us live right now via phone is Reggie Wilson. Hello, Reggie, are you there?
Hello, I'm here.
All right, nice to meet you. I'm Dee May.
Live from Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, where you are right now, live from Brooklyn. So the name Fist and Heel comes from African-American cultural traditions. Would you tell us more about how you came up with this name for your performance group?
I'm a little long-winded, so hopefully, just cut me off if I'm...
Okay, well, let's go. Let's see what happens.
Fist and Heel was a derogatory term that white folks had used to deride the worship style that we now call ring shout, R-I-N-G-S-H-O-U-T, the ring shout, which is basically the foundation of the black church. And it was kind of a carryover of Africanist practices, religious practices. So as enslaved Africans were becoming Baptists and Methodists and creating their own kind of indigenous American Christian forms, this shouting tradition was something, and it was seen very much as a negative thing. And so for me, kind of reclaiming something that was so important to African-American community, African-American politics, African-American organizing, which is the black church, had these roots in something that was at once considered something so backward, so primitive, so unnecessary. So to kind of honor that and honor the idea that people outside of a tradition don't always necessarily have its best interest or enough knowledge or understanding to be able to perceive what's really going on in it and that it's functional. And basically the Fist and Heel was after they had taken away the drums from the enslaved. And so this idea of making something out of nothing, which to me is a very interesting kind of postmodern or performative proposition. especially in dance, we're often going into the studio with absolutely nothing and having to emerge, you know, 3 weeks, 6 months, 5 years later with something substantial. And I feel like that's kind of been my long-term goal.
Well, as in most arts that take on cultural traditions, you're also educating us at the same time. So thank you for that description and that information. The dance piece that you're going to be performing is titled Moses S., and we played a clip from that. I guess where does that title come from?
It's actually said Moses's.
Moses's.
As if there was more than one Moses. And the piece kind of started, like most of my pieces, where there's some type of obsession or fascination that I have. And I'd read years ago Zora Neale Hurston's book, Moses, Man of the Mountain. And then relatively more recently, in 2010, I was invited to Israel to participate in a pilot artistic program to engage with arts and artists there. And one of my dancers has an uncle, Uncle Avi, who is a Moses scholar. So when she found out I was going, that I was reading this book about Moses, she was just like, oh, you have to meet him. I met him and went to one of his lectures, and he had talked about, you know, at the beginning of the semester, he says, show me your Moses and I'll tell you who you are.
Oh, wow.
And that just kind of resonated out, you know, it kind of echoed in the universe when I heard him say that. And I was just like, I wonder if that's really true. And, you know, he showed me images of Moses from different time periods, from different cultures. And the thing that was most striking about it, it was like, here's this one figure or historical character, but the manifestations of him in these different places were so different that you wouldn't have known it was coming from the same source. And especially also at that time reading Zora Neale Hurston's version, which was the telling of the Exodus story as a Southern folk tale. So that's kind of how it started.
Well, I love all these connections and how it all fell together like that. I think that's beautiful. Well, it's a 70-minute work, and it's performed by 9 performers, including you. Mm-hmm. And you're drawing from a lot of African-American history in this work as well.
We're drawing from African-American, we're drawing from African diasporic, we're drawing from global and world history. The piece, after I was in Israel, I did some research and traveled to Egypt, also traveled and did some research in Mali, had kind of a side trip over to Alaska and started meeting and start thinking about leadership roles within Native American communities there, and there were actually a number of visual artists that were named Moses, and so I started looking at their works, and so I think there's probably a little bit of Southeast Asian, there's definitely some classical ballet stuck in there somewhere, there's definitely some American modern dance stuck in there, there's some social dance African American, and primarily the vocal component is pulled from African American vocal traditions and Caribbean, specifically from Trinidad and Tobago, from the Spiritual Baptists. So it's a hodgepodge that somehow I think does pull together into one effective kind of dance narrative.
Well, you've brought some really interesting elements all together in this one piece. Can you explain what you mean by your description of your style as post-African neo-hoodoo modern dance? You had some fun with that.
The basic function of it is to kind of make people laugh, as we just did. Also to make people kind of, in my own way, I kind of advocate for dance as its own legitimate art form. And a lot of times for modern dance or contemporary dance, a lot of folks either feel intimidated by it or don't have that much experience with it. I think also can be said for African dance forms. And so when you put them together, which is what I do, it's hard to explain to people because there aren't necessarily models out there that they would have had experience about it. So I think when I came up with post-African neo-hoodoo modern dance, there were just a bunch of terms that I had written down that I felt like were relevant to me in the work. And it also kind of signifies to people that you're not really going to understand what this is until you actually see it. That it's pulling from a bunch of different strands, a bunch of different traditions, a bunch of different histories and times and places. And so it's hard to put your finger on, but I don't think that that's necessarily special for me. I think that that's true of many dance you know.
And it all makes up Reggie Wilson Fist and Heel Performance Group. So I'm looking forward to it. It's been great talking with you, Reggie. And
it's been wonderful here, too. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on Stage and Studio, and we look forward to your performance in Portland.
Be well.
You take care. Well, Whitebird Dance presents Reggie Wilson Fist and Heel Performance Group Thursday through Saturday, November 17th through the 19th at 8 p.m. And all shows are at Lincoln Hall, and that's located at 1620 Southwest Park Avenue at Portland State University, PSU. And for tickets, you can visit whitebird.org or call at 1-800-380-3516. That's 1-800-380-3516. And there are discounts available for groups and students and seniors. And you can find all that info as well as the podcast of this interview at stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio. I'm DMA Roberts. My guests are Walter Jaffe and Paul King, the founders of Whitebird Dance. And I want to talk about the other shows. It was great talking with Reggie. That was so awesome. The other shows in the Whitebird Uncaged series, you've got Tawny Holt. Now, that's January 18th through the 22nd. Tawny Holt is a Portland artist who does inventive, you know, kind of performance art, kind of innovative dance. Tell us more about the work she's performing, Walter.
Well, we can't very much. It's brand new.
Because it's an original piece and she's developing it now.
When we present Portland-based artists, we normally commission them to create something new. Barney was... Barney's the bird. Sorry, Tawny.
Tawny. You've adopted her, I think.
Tawny received in 2014 one of our major Whitebird Dance Awards. It's called the Barney Creative Prize, and it's a commissioning prize for artists in the Western States. They get $15,000. It's funded through the Dr. Lemelson Trust and the Whitebird New Works Fund to create a work that will appear in a White Fruit to Whitebird season. So now it's 2017, and Tawny's been working hard on a new work that she calls Sensation Disorientation, and it's for an all-female work. It goes, again, with our theme of the power of gender, another all-women's work. And it explores the emotional and physical states of women at various ages. You have several generations represented in the piece. We have yet to see it, but based on the images, it's going to be extremely, there's going to be lots of movement. And this is something, by the way, Tawny works in all different kinds of spaces and different kinds of movement styles. She can be minimalist or she can
be
have
grand.
Lots of movement.
Yeah.
She'll work in a warehouse space or in a storefront. In this case, she is performing for the very first time for Whitebird at Reed College Performing Arts Building, the Diver Studio Theater in the Round. So this is going to be very exciting where audience is sitting around the piece. She wants her dances to get very close up and the audience to be very close up to the dancers.
So this is way more intimate than the Lincoln Hall space.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So up close and personal. And then in March, you've got a company from Brazil, and I'm going to let you pronounce the name of it. What is it? What's the company coming
it's
from, Paul?
Companhia Urbana de Dança.
Oh, that sounds beautiful.
Yes, it's a hip-hop company from Brazil, and
wow.
all male.
All right. And so does that fit in with the rest of the theme of the diaspora, too? Or?
Yes, and also exploring the power of gender. You know,
okay.
What is it like to see a work that is only all men or
right,
all women?
Right.
And is there something gained or something lost?
Right. Interesting. So, but they've been here. And then the main dance series in January, speaking of all male, is Ballet Boys, right? I assume they're all male. Are they?
You are right.
They are returning. And this group has been on Whitebird season a couple of times, hasn't it? Or is it returning,
yes,
at least?
Yes, they're returning.
Yeah.
It's the second time. And what's interesting about Ballet Boys, they're based in London. The co-artistic directors are Michael Nunn and Billy Trevitt, and they were principal dancers, stars of the Royal Ballet. And they decided to leave together during the height of their career because they wanted to embrace contemporary dance. But they didn't. They kind of wanted to leave ballet behind, so they didn't use their names, which were very famous in England. So they used their middle names, William Piper. And nobody knew who William Piper or what that was. But every time they were written about or talked about, they were referred to as the Ballet Boys. And they didn't like that, but they finally said, okay.
Let's embrace it.
We're the Ballet Boys. So they did change the name. And for 10 years, they toured all over the world with two female dancers doing contemporary work. When they got a little bit older and weren't able to move as much or as well, they decided to explore bringing young men who we know from Billy Elliot's story, weren't so interested in dance and didn't feel comfortable doing it. And these guys were gymnasts, they were athletes, some were thinking about dance, but they brought them in and showed them how athletic dance was.
Interesting.
And yeah. Embraced them, and now they have a whole center where they work with young men in all over England.
It's fascinating. It's a good story. Well, and let's finish out your season in April. Ronald K. Brown. Oh, actually, in February, you've got a different ballet company, CCN Ballet de Lorraine. And is that more traditional, Walter?
No.
No? Nothing is traditional, it sounds like.
On the contrary. Despite the image that we have in the poster, which shows look like ballet dancers.
Yeah, they do look kind of traditional.
Ballet de Lorraine, the artistic director's name is Peter Jakobsen. And he is extremely interested in contemporary, basically contemporary ballet. So he has pieces by French choreographers, many of whom are not that well known outside France. There's also a Merce Cunningham piece, which it looks like we will be getting, called Sound Dance. And so there's going to be a large variety. But it's contemporary movement, contemporary scores. And we think it's going to be very interesting to introduce this company. This is the first tour of the company, we believe, in the U.S. and certainly in the West Coast. So we have the West Coast premiere of the company.
We've got two more to go, and we're running out of time. Ronald K. Brown Evidence will be performing in April, and this is a different group focusing on traditional African-American dance or African dance with spoken word. So this is part of the African-American theme or African diaspora theme.
Ronald K. Brown actually was presented by us years ago, about 10 years ago, twice. And Alvin
I thought he sounded familiar.
And Alvin Ailey has a lot of his work. There's ongoing movement. Unlike Reggie, there's a continuity to the movement. It's more movement-based than vocalization. There's no vocalization. However, one of the pieces that we mostly will be bringing is set to Stevie Wonder, which is going to be fantastic.
Be
and Ronald K. Brown was an artist we were going to bring when 9/11 happened, and they were unable to come, and they came the
I
next
remember.
Year.
Right. Yeah. So that's good. So you're carrying on the tradition of having, you know, returning artists, too. And finally, another returning artist is the great Martha Graham Dance Company, and they're returning in May.
Yes, over 90 years old.
I didn't realize it was the longest running. I mean, it's billed as the oldest, but I think they probably want to be known as the longest running dance company in the world. In the world.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, it's true. 90 years and still very vibrant and vital.
And they're doing a piece that Martha Graham created in 1948.
Yeah, the program's not yet set. There will likely be two Graham pieces and then two contemporary pieces because they want to bring contemporary work into the company as well, but inspired by the genius of Martha Graham.
Well, and of course you can find out about every group we've been talking about this entire season at whitebird.org. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. In the final few minutes of Stage and Studio with my guests Walter Jaffe and Paul King, the founders of Whitebird Dance. You know, Walter and Paul, you know, in the time remaining, it just seems like there's more and more performing arts groups in Portland in the last 5 years. It seems like it's exploded.
Yes.
Is that the same for dance as well? Have you noticed more dance groups?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's, the Northwest is extremely vibrant when it comes to contemporary dance. Portland has several companies. Artists are moving here every day. They're engaging in what's happening. It's very exciting. Tani Holt has started her own nonprofit called Flock, and they are eight artists that work together and share a space out at the...
It's out of Disjecta.
Yeah, out of Disjecta building, and it's been around for several years.
Well, that's good to hear, especially after Conduit, you know, closed. Yes, so yes, I think there needs to be more of those collaborations and partnerships. You know, there has been so much massive growth in the arts communities here in Portland. What do you foresee as the challenges in the coming years? Of course, venue, because everything's being bought up and people are losing their spaces and sharing the audience, you know, because there's only a certain amount of audience, you know, that unless we keep growing them. Mm-hmm. Maybe that is the challenge, is growing the audience.
Well,
what do you
I think
foresee?
What's really fascinating is about the audience is it's constantly changing, evolving, growing here in Portland simply because more and more people are moving to Portland. We're finding, we actually, last season, we had our strongest ticket sales in the history of Whitebird. However, we do want to say that despite that, as many in the nonprofit world know, and we want to communicate to our audience, is ticket sales only cover 50% of our total budget, because one of our very important pieces of our mission is keeping our tickets prices low and affordable. So this is another challenge, and this is probably the major challenge, is raising the funds on the contributed side to meet our costs.
Yeah, funding is always going to be a problem, isn't it? But we're running out of time. But I just wanted to say, you know, thank you for hanging in there for the last 19 years. I know both of you have kept it going without any salaries. And that's quite an investment in this community from a personal viewpoint.
Well, thank you. We're lucky. We get to work together in this amazing community with people that are extraordinary in the community and those that we bring in. And we feel very fortunate to be able to have found this path after, you know, this great midlife crisis we must have had almost 20 years ago, but that it be it's become
you totally changed your career and said, I want to do nonprofit dance, and there you
it
and you've been
happened.
Flourishing.
That's
you've been flourishing.
It didn't happen right away, but yes,
well, it's our life's work, and we're very fortunate, guys.
Well, we're fortunate to have you here. I mean, it takes a lot of dedication, and it's a lot of work. It's a full-time job for both of you.
I just want to interject, and you too, Dima. You've
been holding in.
And we want to congratulate you.
It's almost
you
like we started at the same time.
Yeah.
For the years,
you know,
we're in it together.
You were one of my first guests when I started doing Stage and Studio almost, 19 years ago or
exactly.
more?
Exactly. We've known you a long time, and you're still doing it. And that's
we'll have to have a 20th
really
anniversary
fantastic.
Celebration
next
season. Year. How's that? Next year.
Keep
okay,
up,
let's
keep
do
up
it.
The great work.
Yes.
You guys are awesome.
It's fantastic. What
well,
you're
Walter
doing.
Jaffe and Paul King of Whitebird Dance, always a pleasure, and I do mean that. Always a pleasure to talk with you. Before we go today, a few more shows, a shout out. They've been on Stage and Studio, but they are closing soon. Milagro's Day of the Dead show, El Muerto Vagabundo, I recommend it. Shows are at Milagro, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. You can find out more info at milagro.org. Heads, Hands, Feet, Tales of Dismemberment, Samantha Vanda Merva's company, Shaking the Tree, closes November 5th this weekend, and there is a show, I guess, Sunday at 5 p.m. All shows are at Shaking the Tree at 823 Southeast Grant Street in Portland. And finally, here at Defunct Theater, directed by Andrew Klaus Vineyard. And the show runs through November 12th, Thursdays through Sundays at 7:30 p.m. They still do a pay what you can on Thursdays, and Sundays are, you know, sliding scale on Fridays and Saturdays. So check it out. The shows are at 7:30 p.m. at the Backdoor Theater, located at 4321 Southeast Hawthorne Street in Portland. That's Defunct Theater. That's it for Stage and Studio. My thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. I'm so glad to have her back. She's so phenomenal. Thank you, Janet. If you missed any of the show, hear it online later today at stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio. Till next time, I'm Dima Roberts.